Chapter 5. Slow Burn. On the same afternoon that Mario Moro was reliving the night of the Fenice fire, waving signals to his imaginary water-bearing helicopter, the panel of experts investigating the fire handed the chief magistrate their preliminary report. Arson had not been the cause. The experts had reached this conclusion, they said, because it had been established that the last workman had left the theater at 7:30 p.m., and the fire had not broken out until at least an hour later. According to their theory, fires caused by arson generally involve the use of highly flammable substances and are raging within minutes of being set. Accidental fires tend to smolder a while, and from all appearances, the fire at the Fenice had smoldered for at least 2 hours. Heavy wooden beams supporting the floor of the lobby on the third level, the Ridotto del Loggione, where the blaze had presumably started, had burned through completely, indicating a slow, penetrating start to the fire. Most likely, according to the preliminary report, the fire started when resins used to refinish the wooden flooring had been accidentally ignited by a spark, or a short circuit, or the stub of a cigarette, or the heat from an overloaded electrical cable. More than 1,000 kilos of the resins had been stored in the ridotto, and some of the containers had been left open. The experts also noted that 8 people who had been in the vicinity of the Fenice that evening had come forward after the fire to say they had smelled something burning as early as 6 o'clock. This, too, would have been consistent with a smoldering fire. Given what they knew, the experts estimated that the fire had smoldered for about 2 or 3 hours, meaning that it had started around 6 p.m. In their initial report, the experts cited the chaotic conditions at the Fenice that had made an accidental fire a near inevitability. The prosecutor, Felice Casson, compiled a list of people he deemed responsible for those conditions, then summoned them to the chief magistrate's office and informed them they were under investigation for criminal negligence. It was understood that if the investigations resulted in formal charges, he would seek jail terms. Mayor Massimo Cacciari headed the list of possible defendants. As mayor, Cacciari was automatically president of the Fenice, so the safety of the theater was his responsibility. The others under investigation included the general manager of the Fenice, the secretary general, the financial chief, the custodian, the director of the restoration work, and the chief engineer of Venice. Most of the accused were men of influence, and they immediately hired the most politically powerful lawyers available. Despite elements of the case in their favor, however, there was one significant factor working against them. Felice Casson, an unusually courageous and relentless prosecutor. The 42-year-old Casson did not look the part. Bespectacled and slight of stature, he had lank brown hair, a pallid complexion, and a youthful face, the most prominent feature of which, paradoxically, was a receding chin. Casson had been born in Chioggia, a tiny fishing village at the southern tip of the Lido, and he was utterly without social pretense or ambition. His one sartorial quirk was a preference for collarless sports shirts, which he wore virtually all the time, even under his black judicial robes. He played on a soccer team with other magistrates, but his real passion was American basketball. On trips to the United States, even business trips, he always made arrangements to see at least one NBA game, and he still talked about a memorable contest between the Chicago Bulls and the New York Knicks, in which Michael Jordan managed to brush off 2 defensive players detailed to guard him throughout the game. But all in all, Felice Casson was the sort of person who could pass through a room full of people unnoticed. His presence was so light that you could almost imagine him walking through walls. However, he had one physical characteristic that hinted at the presence of an inner turbulence, of banked fires waiting to burst into flame. It was the tendency, when he was angered, for his face to turn pink then red, then scarlet, from the top of his forehead to the neckband of his collarless shirt. Neither his expression nor his voice betrayed the slightest emotion, but there was no disguising the litmus of his face. He was known for it. Defendants due to be cross-examined by Casson were cautioned to watch for the crimson blush and to be guided accordingly.